My name is Frank Dubofsky, and my guest this morning is Katie McGooey, who's with the Longmont Community Justice Partnership, which is located in Longmont. So welcome, Katie.
Thank you, Frank, for having me.
In fact, you'd rather be called Kathleen, right?
I would, thanks.
Okay, and you're known by your initials, or at least the Longmont Community Justice Partnership is LCJB. Tell us, what does LCJB do?
Well, LCJP, Longmont Community Justice Partnership, is a nonprofit organization located in Longmont that was founded in 1994 by Dr. Beverly Teitel and Lana Leonard. We currently have 4 employees, including myself, and our mission is to build community through restorative practices and give people the opportunity to have a voice in creating justice in their community.
Now, you just mentioned the word restorative justice. What is restorative justice, and is that a big part of what you do?
It is, yeah. I'll first describe, there's 3 main areas that we work in, restorative justice being one of them. So I'll describe all 3 first. Restorative justice is our program in which we work in partnership with the Longmont Police and Municipal Court to offer restorative justice as an alternative to the criminal justice system. Second, we work in schools providing training and implementation support for schools to use alternative models to suspension and expulsion, and also to support teachers using classroom management techniques that focus on building trusting and respectful relationships. And third, we have a volunteer and training program where we train over 400 people a year, not only to volunteer with our restorative justice program, but also we train people who would like to use restorative approaches in place of more traditional punitive or disciplinary approaches, for example, in the workplace for employee relations issues.
Okay, well, let's go back to the fundamental introductory question. What is restorative justice?
Yeah, thanks so much for asking that. So restorative justice can look like many different things, and I'll just describe how we use restorative justice in Longmont. So what happens in Longmont is when the police get called out for service, when they talk to the responsible party or the offender and the harm party or the victim, they're looking to see if that offender is taking responsibility for their actions and if the victim is willing for the case to go an alternative route, so not going to court.
So you mentioned 2 things. If the perpetrator is willing to take responsibility, which means more or less to acknowledge that they did something wrong and they're the person. So if they're in there saying, I didn't do it, or fighting about that, then that's probably not a situation in which restorative justice would work, at least not at that point in the case.
That's correct. That's okay. Completely correct. And we acknowledge that sometimes that offender may be taking responsibility at a later time. And that's why we're very fortunate that now we also get referrals from the municipal court and probation, where they can screen people after having met with a police officer. And if they're taking responsibility at that time, they may also be eligible for restorative justice.
And then you say that the victim, which is the person from whom this bad event has been done, i.e., let's say petty theft would be a pretty typical example, they have to agree to participate in this. This isn't something that you can just come to them and say, we talk to the judge or we talk to the police and this is what we're going to do. They have to agree to this process.
That's correct. Restorative justice is a victim-centered approach. So the victim's voice is prioritized overall. And we can also think of community members as an indirect victim. So we're really responding here to the needs of the directly impacted party and indirectly impacted parties. And if they at any point say, we don't feel right about this going forward, then restorative justice is off the table.
Okay, what's the need here? Why are you doing this in trying to change or shake up the criminal justice system? For example, the typical way this might be handled would be the matter might be charged in municipal court rather than county or district court, and you could have a deferred sentencing or deferred action or you to the person, or you could just simply have them plead guilty if they were guilty and then have the judge do the sentencing. Why is this a better idea in your view?
Yeah, I'll talk through the steps that kind of paint the picture of why this works and why we believe it's an improvement on the criminal justice system as it exists alone. So once that police officer chooses to refer the case to our program, it's a complete diversion around the court system. So our staff will receive the police report, will call the victim and offender directly and speak with their support people as well. From there, our staff matches the case with two volunteer facilitators. So we train willing volunteers from our community, and those volunteers receive information about the case and will meet with the victims and offenders separately in what we call a pre-conference to have them tell their story, answer their questions, make sure they know what to expect. And then those facilitators will lead a group dialogue that involves any of the involved victims and offenders, two volunteer community members, the police officer who referred the case, and then them, of course, the two facilitators. So the three questions that they're looking at are: what happened, who was affected and how, and what can be done to make things right. Again, the victim has a key role in stating what they need, how they were harmed, and what they need to have the relationships repaired. The offender also gets to identify what he or she is willing to do to make things right. So we're not handing out a sentence and telling them, this is what you have to do. The community members and police officer also get to speak to how they were impacted by what happened and ask the offender to consider different ways to make things right. Throughout all of this, we're looking at the strengths and interests and future goals of the person who caused harm and hoping that they can incorporate those in their restorative justice contract. So there were actually...
There's actually a contract here?
Yeah, so the offender will leave that process with a contract with 3 to 5 actionable items that they're going to do to repair harmed relationships. If they're successful in completing those, then they won't have a criminal charge on their record from that incident.
Okay. And how long have you been at this? How long have you been the executive director of the Longmont Community Justice Partnership?
I've been working at LCJP for 4 years, and I've been the executive director for 2. So I started there as a bilingual case coordinator, working really closely with our clients and the police. And later I became a program manager. At this point, I am overseeing all the administrative and development aspects of the organization, developing new partnerships, with schools, with the city of Longmont. And then I continue to facilitate cases myself and lead trainings. And overall, one of my key roles is to make sure that we're maintaining fidelity to restorative justice best practices. It's a growing field, and so we're always running the risk of, maybe getting a little off course and doing something that's actually sort of exclusive or punitive, but calling it restorative. So it's part of my job to make sure that we're practicing with integrity.
Okay. Again, my name is Frank Dubofsky, and we're here with a public affair. And my guest this morning is Kathleen McGooey, who is with the Longmont Community Justice Partnership Program. Let's get back to where we were in the process of somebody going through this restorative justice effort. So there's a contract, apparently, that the offender signs, and is that signed with the victim as well? The two of them sign up, and give us an example of what might be in this contract. And again, why is this a better idea than just simply asking the person in court, do you plead guilty or not guilty? And the person says guilty, and the judge says, well, you get probation or you get probation in 5 days, etc. Maybe you can answer those two questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think I'll share a case example in order to best answer that question. So we work with all levels of cases, petty, misdemeanor, and felony level offenses. We work with offenders of all ages. So 3/4 of our cases involve youth and 1/4 are adults. And those cases can range.
Youth is anybody under 18.
Under 18, yeah, thank you. And those cases can range in anything from theft, vandalism, trespassing, all the way up to things like arson, burglary, menacing, felony level charges. So a case example I'd like to share involves two neighbors. It's kind of a classic case. One individual, we'll call him Dan, was cleaning his gun. He's a registered gun owner. And accidentally, while cleaning it, he fired the gun. And it just so happened that it went out his window and through his neighbor's window into his neighbor's bedroom. His neighbor happened to be in the bedroom at that time and very fortunately was not standing in the path of the bullet. She called the police immediately. And of course, these two neighbors in this case actually had a friendship and relationship, but she didn't know what was going on when she saw this bullet hit her wall. So naturally, she called the police. The police came and contacted the person who had accidentally fired the gun, Dan. And at that moment, the woman who had the bullet go through her house thought, I have to stop speaking to him. He is unsafe. I don't know where this is going. She was imagining the case is going to go to trial. We're entering into an adversarial process. Who knows what he's going to say about me? What am I going to have to say about him? And similarly, he saw it wasn't okay to speak with his neighbor anymore. So he shut down and isolated himself and started thinking, well, they're going to go after me. Do I need to hire a lawyer? You know, getting ready for a fight, essentially.
Getting ready for court litigation.
Exactly. And, you know, people think of Judge Judy. They think of whatever they've seen on TV. And so in this case, the police screened the case, saw that he was taking responsibility. He was very remorseful. He felt very bad. It was truly an accident. So they referred the case to us. So our staff and our facilitators became aware that these two neighbors had stopped talking to each other and had created these very dramatic, fearful stories about each other in an instant because of this one moment. And so what happened was when they came together in this restorative justice conference, they were able to hear each other's stories in a safe and respectful space. And Jan was able to hear that his neighbors didn't want him to suffer for what had happened. They wanted him to learn, and they wanted to make sure that nothing like that ever happened again. And that's what we hear from victims and harm parties and community members all the time. They don't want someone who's caused harm to endure more harm themselves. They just want that person to learn and make a different choice next time.
And the difference might be that in the justice system, one, by definition, it's called adversarial, and therefore people are not looking necessarily for a way to work out things, at least not immediately, and that there's a lot of inherent accusatory effort that goes into it, and there are all kinds of rules that apply that make it difficult to have that sort of different interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Let me also mention something, maybe you can clear this up a little bit. Apparently, you now are linked to the KGNU website. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. One of the things I wanted to share with the KGNU listeners is that Colorado is actually leading the country with restorative justice implementation. Representative Pete Lee has made sure to pass legislation through the state that encourages district attorneys' offices and schools to use restorative justice as a first consideration, especially for first-time offenders. So what that means is that there's programs popping up all over the state, along the Front Range and throughout, to the east, to the west, and all those programs are looking for volunteers. So I know in this day
and age, you provide training if you become a volunteer, right?
Yes.
So you don't sort of walk, stumble into this. You have some idea what you're supposed to do.
That's right. We want to make sure we're giving volunteers a big responsibility here. And so we want to make sure they feel prepared. So LCJP provides volunteer opportunities, as do programs throughout the state.
How do they get a hold of you?
So they're welcome to go to our website, which is www.lcjp.org. And please just call or email. Our staff is wonderful to talk to. They're wonderful at building relationships. And we can help people connect with their local restorative justice program so that they can find out about volunteer opportunities near them.
What is your phone number at work?
It's 303-776-1527. And that would also, that opportunity and invitation is also available for people who are working in schools or perhaps in a workplace where they want to use approaches to address conflict in a way that really prioritizes trust and respect and accountability, and really works towards building relationships, repairing those relationships instead of traditional disciplinary processes that are usually more punitive.
Yeah, this program seems to be in marked contrast to our present Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who's come out very strongly and directed his United States attorneys in the various states to file maximum charges and try to extract maximum sentences. And of course, that potentially presents a problem even for Colorado in its most basic sense, is that under federal law, marijuana, its possession, growing is illegal. So that's a confrontation area around the idea of maximizing penalties. The idea being if it's maximized, people will be deterred and people will be more robustly punished for what they do. What's your reaction in talking about what you're doing in contest to a severe process within our traditional judicial system?
Thanks for asking that, Frank.
Long question.
Yeah, no, that's okay. This is such an important issue in our country right now. And we're not working on the level of federal offenses, of course, but I can speak to the fact that if say in Longmont we were forced to only utilize maximum sentences for the most egregious offense for which we saw some of our offenders, it would be devastating for our community.
For example, the defendant would end up probably with a record. It might even end up with some jail time. And both of those could handicap that defendant in terms of his future prospects and therefore make him more apt to commit another crime again.
Correct. So I'll use an example of how a case could go if we weren't using more diversion and preventative methods like we are with restorative justice. So in December, there was an incident in Longmont with three teenage boys breaking into an evicted apartment. They found some marijuana and paraphernalia there that they had in backpacks. When the police arrived, they made the choice to run from the police. They went in three different directions. It was bitter cold that night, and one of them actually made contact with a police officer and then continued to run away, which led the police officer to deploy a canine. Fortunately, the boy was not injured when the canine deployed. In this case, these three boys came to restorative justice. They were taking responsibility. They had a lot to learn from that incident. They hadn't thought through how they appeared. There's so much going on right now with police accountability and police making choices in a split second. And these boys all could have been mistaken for being, perhaps ready to threaten or fight back against the officers. So they had a lot to learn from the process. And when we look at that case, so that case cost us as an organization about $4,500 to go through that, right, including costs for training, volunteers, et cetera. Let's say instead of that case coming to restorative justice, and restorative justice is a process that's proven to reduce recidivism or reoffense rates, let's say that those three boys went through the criminal justice system and it ends up that one of them reoffends and continues to be in the system. So, that's in alignment with statistics around reoffense rates. So let's say he's incarcerated for 1 year as a youth. That costs us $60,000. Well, then he becomes an adult. And the most significant factor that's correlated to an adult entering the criminal justice system is how young they were when they first entered and how frequently they made contact with that system. So let's say he, this one of the three of them, is incarcerated for two more years as an adult. So that's $72,000 for 2 years of locking him up. Putting those 3 years together, we're looking at a cost of $130,000. And beyond that, of course, we have separated this individual from his community, from his family, and we've stigmatized him. We've said, you made enough mistakes that we have to separate you from our society. So the question is, you know, looking back, do we want to invest $1,500 in that individual to keep him out of the system and to build up his identity as a valued member of society and put in place those lessons that we want you to be held accountable for your actions and make things right? Or, you know, looking at the numbers, do we want to choose to put a lot more money into separating somebody and essentially taking away most of their rights? You know, when these folks come back into the community, what opportunities are they being given to re-enter and reintegrate successfully? There's not that much out there. Longmont has actually started a reentry initiative that's doing amazing work with women exiting incarceration. But generally, and yeah, I want to put in a plug because that's amazing work. But generally, you know, what does our community, what message do we want to send? Do we want to invest in building trust and respect and accountability? Or do we want to promote the idea that once you've messed up a few times, we respond by saying, you know, we're going to take away your right to your access to right livelihood and remind you every day that you're someone that we can't trust.
Okay. Thank you. Again, my guest is Kathleen McCooey, and she's the director of the Longmont Community Justice Partnership. And she's given us some valuable information about the alternative justice system that they're involved in and how it works. Is there anything else you'd add to what you've been saying that you think particularly important that the listeners would hear about what you're doing?
Oh, thanks so much, Frank. I think mostly I just want folks to know that in this time of challenge, when we see our country changing in ways that brings up concern for many of us, and we want to be part of changing how we want to be part of that change, you know, we want to change in a different direction. Restorative justice is that opportunity. So I'd like to invite people to find out more, to share what they've heard today, and then to know, of course, that restorative practices can be used outside of just the justice system. These are models and approaches we can use in schools, in the workplace, even in our families and our personal relationships. If we want to choose for things like taking responsibility, seeking healing and forgiveness, and creating a more trusting community.
Yeah, historically, at least in the last 30 or 40 years, the American system of justice has had enormous difficulties because of racism, because of lopsided sentencing, because of the fact that we've abandoned rehabilitation as a concept largely in the various prisons. And if we're the worst country in the world, and that's not exaggerating, in terms of extracting years of punishment and collateral consequences, i.e. if you get convicted of a felony, your chances in some felonies are fairly minor, some of which are not minor. But if you get convicted of that, you've really impacted the person's chances of being successful in their life and not staying in jail. It's hard to get a job if your employer, would-be employer, knows that you've had a felony. It's also impacts a person's self-image of themselves and their ability to do other things with their life. So it's a huge deal, and taking an approach that would not end up with felony records strikes me as absolutely essential if we're going to get a handle on the fact we sentence more people to prison than any other country in the world, and that includes China with 3 to 4 times the population, and Russia, which we consider to be super severe, but compared to us, they're not so severe. Anyway, Kathleen, what would you say to us as we kind of wrap this up? We're coming down the home stretch, as they say, in racing, not so much on radio.
Well, as we come down the home stretch, I would just like to express gratitude and real appreciation for the communities across Colorado, including members of public safety, so police, district attorney's offices, municipal courts, people who are part of those types of work, those fields, who are saying, yes, we can acknowledge that it's time to do things differently, and we're willing to support these new ideas, design new systems in which we can work in partnership and collaboration.
And again, you've already mentioned this, excuse me, but you're also in the schools, and I think this is a wonderful device in order to deal with conflict within schools, so that's also exciting. Thank you very much for your time. I think we're about done, and I appreciate you coming in, and give her a call if you want to get involved in this system, either in the schools or in the justice system. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank.